Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and today is November 28th, 2016. This is an important podcast about an important subject. Today, we're going to be talking about the chemical herbicide glyphosate. We're going to cut right to the heart of an issue affecting your health and that of your children and loved ones. Unfortunately, we're also probably going to undermine any remaining trust you may have in the hybrid system of corporate interests and government regulations that we all live under. According to a new report, glyphosate residues are found in, I'll use this word carefully, alarmingly high levels in a very wide range of popular American foods. Now, luckily, my PhD was in toxicology, so I find the material relatively straightforward to interpret and report on, and I don't trot out that pedigree very often, but today I will. This report is thorough, it's careful, it's comprehensive, and today we're going to be talking with one of its lead authors. This report was put together by a group called Food Democracy Now, and it's calling for renewed federal investigation into the likely harmful effects of glyphosate on human and environmental health, as well as for a ban on certain uses of glyphosate. So who is Food Democracy Now? Well, Food Democracy Now, or FDN, is a grassroots community dedicated to building a sustainable food system that protects our natural environment and sustains farmers and nourishes families. Their first campaign successfully put officials endorsed by FDN members in the Obama administration, so they know how to get results. From the FDN website, we read, quote, "Our food system is fundamentally broken. A few companies dominate the market, prioritizing profits over people and our planet. Government policies put the interests of corporate agribusiness over the livelihoods of farm families. Farm workers toil in unsafe conditions for minimal wages. School children lack access to healthy foods, as do millions of Americans living in poverty. From rising childhood and adult obesity to issues of food safety, air and water pollution, workers' rights, and global warming, our current food system is leading our nation to an unsustainable future." End quote. Now, we here at Peak Prosperity share a lot in common with those assessments of FDN. Yes, our food system is broken. No, it does not have to remain that way. All of our interviews with Joel Salatin of Polyface Farm and the Kaisers of Singing Frog Farms, among many others, prove there is another way to farm that is actually in relationship to the earth, its rhythms, and each other. To tell us about glyphosate and the startling new report they commissioned is Dave Murphy, the founder and executive director of Food Democracy Now. Murphy has been called the most crucial and politically savvy actor in the ongoing efforts to help move American agriculture into the 21st century as a result of his Sustainable Dozen campaign, which resulted in four candidates being placed in high-level positions at the USDA and his efforts to reform food and agriculture under the Obama administration. In 2006, Murphy moved back to Iowa to help stop a factory farm from being built near his sister's farm. After seeing the loss of basic democratic rights of rural Iowans, Murphy decided to stay in Iowa to fight for Iowa's farmers and rural residents and expose the flaws of industrial agriculture to help create a more sustainable future for all Americans. Previously, he has worked as an environmental and food policy lobbyist and political strategist. His writing has appeared in The Nation, The Hill, Huffington Post, and The New York Times. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's really great to have you on because I admire and support the work you're doing first to reform farming as a practice and as a lifestyle. And because we at Peak Prosperity, Dave, we've been poking around the edges of this glyphosate story for some time. And I've got your report right in front of me. People are going to hear me thumbing through it. And it's titled Glyphosate, Unsafe on Any Plate. Hey, clear nod to Ralph Nader's book that shook up the auto industry. Am I right?
No, absolutely. We think that much like the automobile industry, and the interesting thing is that the parallels are very similar. The automobile industry in the 40s and 50s and 60s, they focused on mass producing cars and trying to produce them cheaply. They didn't put safety first. And when critics of safety records of automobiles first became public, they were vigorously attacked. And, mm-hmm. The interesting thing is, if you look, European auto industry, starting with Volvo and then Mercedes and Audi, they took safety, safe vehicles and safe cars seriously. And one of the things is the European auto industry is doing much better than Detroit at this point. The Detroit fought regulations and they fought safety rules and regulations, and the people's trust in American automobiles declined. And I think the same thing is happening here in the United States. Basically, these food companies have relied on basically an outdated mode of producing cheap calories that really started under Nixon. And, producing cheap calories has not really, that policy or that belief system has not really resulted in producing the safest, healthiest food. There's a lot of cheap calories out there, but if you walk down your average street in America, you'll notice one thing. Most people do not look healthy. And in fact, we have an obesity epidemic where over 60% of adults, U.S. and American adults, are overweight or are obese, which is kind of alarming.
Indeed, the health epidemic that we're facing is pretty serious. And there's clearly something has gone wrong. Epidemiologically, we have all the data we need. I like how you're framing this, saying, look, when industries come along, they, of course, want to do things as cheaply as they can because we have a profit motive. And they do that. And then eventually people start to get more sophisticated and they say, hey, we would like cars that don't kill us when we bump into a brick wall at 10 miles an hour. That would be fantastic. Can we do anything about that? And the first response of any industry, of course, is to defend itself and defend not itself, but its profits. And so I think that's a great way to frame this, that here's an industry, it's time for it to mature, let's look at the data. And that's why I want to tell you, Dave, how impressed I am with this report. So I've got in front of me 29 pages cover to cover. It's packed with science, it's got the latest research, the knowns, the unknowns, lots of citations. It's hard-hitting, but not sensationalist. I think it's just a great example of how such a report should be done. So first question, what led your group to put what's clearly a lot of time and effort into producing this report? Why glyphosate?
Well, there's two reasons. One, I'm from a small town in Iowa, and I'm, you said earlier in the introduction, I moved back to fight a factory farm half a mile from my sister's farm. And what I really learned is that the rules of democracy are rigged against us, especially if you're a family farmer, you're someone living in rural America, and you support clean water and clean air. These industries have figured out a way to kind of lobby and use their political donations or lobbying influence to always rig the rules against the citizens and clean water and clean air and healthy food. I'll just say, Roundup, one of the things is, being from Iowa, you're always aware of what the biggest industry in your state is, or at least you should be. And for Iowa, that's agriculture. And I moved back initially to fight factory farms, but it was very clear that there was a real problem with Monsanto bullying farmers in the Midwest, threatening them over what they claimed would be patent violations and making up claims that they were illegally saving seeds. So that's really how Monsanto first got on our radar, the fact that they were bullying farmers in the Midwest. And then I started looking into it further. One of the interesting things is Iowa produces 97% GMO soybeans and 94% Roundup Ready corn. Mm-hmm. So Roundup is the main chemical sprayed in our state. The more I learned about it and the more I kept reading about new studies coming out, the more concerns we had. And then as we helped lead these GMO labeling ballot initiatives, we kind of dug into the history of Monsanto. And I studied history in college, so I always like to go, if I'm analyzing a company, I always like to go back to their long-term history, not just the product that they're producing now. And one of the alarming things is Monsanto's history. They produce some of the most toxic chemicals on the planet, including Agent Orange, PCBs, dioxin, and DDT. And one of the things about them is that in each case of these chemicals that they produced, they were legal, they were approved by the FDA, by the EPA, and the proper agencies. But the problem is, just like the tobacco industry, Monsanto knew that these products were causing harm, even to their own workers, and they still hid the fact of harm, even from their own. You know, I'll just say, like, if you read the transcripts from the trial of U.S. veteran, you know, Vietnam veterans on Agent Orange, it would really give you pause when you learn that these are the people responsible for producing the seeds and then the chemicals that go on your food. So we chose to do this report because in the process of our investigation and looking into this, we found out that the USDA had never really even released pesticide residue results for glyphosate. And I find that really shocking that it's the most widely used weed killer or herbicide in America and also the world. And the U.S. government won't release basic pesticide residue data to the American public. Those are just things that, you know, as a citizen and as a resident of Iowa, I find it kind of shocking. So we looked into these, you know, we did a year and a half investigation behind the science and the regulatory, what I would say collusion or manipulation by the industry. We looked into it, and then we were able to find a lab that did this testing. We had no idea what we were going to find, meaning we had an idea where it may be, but we had no idea what the levels actually were. And I think that the reason we took our time with this report and the reason we made it so detailed is because the highest level was in Cheerios, you know, which is the first like whole food that a mother will feed their child as they're transitioning from breast milk or formula. Cheerios is kind of an iconic brand. And it, you know, all the mothers I talk to, the babies love to grab onto them. They're like perfect finger food because they have that hole in the center. And so it's a perfect food for a mother to automatically give their child. The only problem is a single serving with this level of glyphosate residue is twice as harmful to health as new research is showing that. Like the levels that we found in Cheerios with glyphosate, It was 1,125.3 parts per billion. So one serving of a Cheerios to a 1-year-old child is twice as evident. Current research and, you know, scientific evidence shows that just that one serving, that child would be, you know, exposed to a harmful dose of glyphosate.
So let's start at the beginning. I love starting at the beginning with this then. Glyphosate. So from your report, I learned a couple things. I learned that it was originally patented as a chemical. So glyphosate's a compound, it's a molecule. It was originally patented to clean pipes in 1964. That's somebody invented it, a Stauffer chemical. And they're using it to remove unwanted mineral deposits from metal pipes. That's what they started with. It does that because it's a chelating agent. That means it binds things. So anybody who's done any or heard about so-called chelating therapies where you have to take toxic metals out from your body, either you've been acutely poisoned or chronically, a chelating agent simply binds things. So vital nutrients such as iron, manganese, zinc, boron in the soil, they get bound up by glyphosate. But it wasn't until later, it was 1974, that it was discovered, hey, this compound also metabolically poisons plants. So take us through the beginning of you know, where really glyphosate came from and beyond that, like how did this really come into be such a dominant position in the Iowa landscape?
Well, listen, that's a great question. You know, the interesting thing is, you know, Montana likes to claim that, and they've claimed this for 40 years, that glyphosate is perfectly safe. It's safer than table salt. That, you know, we even have Monsanto propagandists, like they have PhDs, but they're so zealous in their defense of Monsanto's products. We had a guy last year that claimed he would drink a pint of glyphosate at Roundup on air. And as soon as the interviewer offered him a glass, he said, "Oh no, I'm not stupid." So clearly, in a theoretical world, they claim it's safe, but in reality, when they're exposed to it, they say no. And here's the thing. So you look at the chemical and what actually it does, not just the one patent that they have for herbicidal or weed killing action. And the interesting thing is glyphosate has three patents. And as you mentioned, the first one was in 1964, Stouffer Chemical Company in Westport, Connecticut. One of my best friends from college lives in Westport, Connecticut. So I found that very interesting that it was originally used to clean pipes. It's like Drano. Like you said, it basically strips minerals out of and heavy metals out of a pipe. And the fact is, scientists have found, you know, with some studies, that it actually chelates those same minerals in soil, and it makes them unavailable into the plant. And so apparently it wasn't the best, it wasn't the best pipe cleaner, or they probably couldn't bring it to market at scale at that time. So at some point in the 60s, a Monsanto chemist discovered that this would kill weeds. And so they applied for a patent in 68 or 69. Monsanto did. They were awarded that patent in 1974, and that's when it first went on the market. And, you know, it was used, you know, in forests to kill weeds on, you know, roadsides and that kind of thing. It was used in forest management for a long time. But the other thing is, and in public parks, the other thing is, interestingly, though, in the 1980s, Monsanto was looking for a way to diversify their portfolio. They didn't want to just be a chemical company, and biotechnology was coming along. And so several of their scientists cleverly figured out that they could take a gene. They found some weeds that became resistant to Roundup, I believe, on their property somewhere. And then their scientists analyzed those plants, and they found a gene in there that made them resistant to Roundup. And then they inserted into corn. And so they made genetically engineered Roundup ready corn and soybeans. And so in 1996, glyphosate use really started to explode across the country. It had been pretty minimally used compared to what it is now. And, you know, in the last 20 years, since 1996, since Roundup ready crops, and they have basically GMO corn that's Roundup ready, soybeans, cotton, sugar beets, and canola. So Monsanto always says, the biotech industry always says, that they're here to feed the world, that we need biotechnology and genetic engineering to feed the world. In reality, when you look at the business model and you look at the system of what GMOs or genetically engineered crops have created, it's really a toxic chemical delivery device. They've created food crops that allow them to be survived being sprayed with Roundup. Everything else in the field dies. But glyphosate and Roundup does not kill those plants that contain those genes. The interesting thing is, you know, today over 300 million pounds of glyphosate are used. Roundup ready and glyphosate based herbicides are used here in the United States. And if, you know, in the report, we have this one graph, this one chart on page 3 that kind of shows from 1992 prior to, you know, this is 4 years prior to Roundup ready crops being introduced, to 2014. I mean, it's just like the states of Minnesota is 3/4 covered in basically all black. Iowa is fully blotted out, and Illinois is fully blotted out. North Dakota is mostly blotted out, and so is South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas. And this is just showing you how widespread glyphosate use is. And the interesting thing is, the U.S. Geological Survey did tests. I think they started in 2007, but then they followed up in 2011, where they showed that rainwater and river and stream samples, 75% of them in the Midwest, contained glyphosate, which is pretty alarming. It's a chemical that's being sprayed on our food, and then it's evaporating into the air and going downwind. And, being taken up into clouds and being, you know, it can fall hundreds of miles away from where it was originally applied.
Now, Dave, you mentioned a third patent. I think we missed it. What was that third one?
Yeah. Well, after Monsanto's patent on Roundup expired in 2000. So they went off patent, and it's a generic chemical. Other chemical companies can create it, but it's still still worth over $5 billion for them annually. Interestingly, in early 2000s, it's 2003, they applied for a patent at the patent office for an antimicrobial. So not only does glyphosate work as a metal chelator or a mineral chelator and a weed killer, it also has an antimicrobial aspect to it this is where scientists really need to look into that mode of action by which glyphosate operates.
So the Monsanto has always gotten away, and the regulatory agencies have always gotten away with saying that glyphosate doesn't harm humans or mammals because we do not have what's called the shikimic pathway. Plants have a shikimic pathway, and that's where they produce three essential aromatic essential, amino acids. And those amino acids produced in that plant, they help that plant grow through photosynthesis. It also, you know, helps with its immune system. The thing is, glyphosate shuts down the shikimic pathway. And they're claiming that humans and mammals don't have it, so there should be no impact on human health. Well, the fact is, humans are, interestingly enough, we're an animal, we're a species, but we have trillions of bacteria on our body and in our stomach. And, you know, the last 5-10 years, scientists have really discovered the major importance of the autoimmune system is with your stomach bacteria. So your gut microflora. And in fact, your gut microflora do have shikimic pathways. So any level of residue on food has a possibility of going into your stomach and disrupting that essential microflora in your stomach. So just like if you take an antibiotic, it will kill beneficial microorganisms. The thing is, glyphosate does the same thing. It will kill beneficial microorganisms in your stomach. And interestingly, even USDA scientists have shown, Bob Kremer, he used to work at the University of Missouri, famously showed on research on his brother's farm that glyphosate was killing beneficial microorganisms in the soil. And as a result, harmful ones were coming to the surface. And famously in agriculture production, when glyphosate is sprayed, the Fusarium fungus is the one that comes up. And I would just say, it may not sound interesting or may sound scary, but that's the rise of Fusarium fungus in a farmer's fields. It leads to crop diseases. And two of the most prominent crop diseases in Iowa are sudden death syndromes of soybeans and also Goss's wilt in corn. And basically what it happens because there's a real massive imbalance in the soil bacteria, and these harmful ones come to the surface. So Monsanto basically has a chemical that they're spraying on our food that they've only gotten approval for based on one criteria, and that's the herbicidal criteria. And I think if doctors and toxicologists and scientists start looking at these multiple patents and these multiple mode of actions, they're really going to find that in the long run, glyphosate is probably even more harmful than DDT to human health and the environment.
Now, this is really, you know, shocking, and I guess it shouldn't be, but the story here is that I think a lot of people assume that for a chemical that we're going to apply 300 million pounds of to ourselves, that would be pretty thoroughly studied, that you would have a variety of studies that would be conducted in animal studies. You would have both acute and chronic studies, meaning we find out what the lethal dose is, but then we are interested more long-term. What happens? You know, what happens when we are using this compound? And you know, what happens to things like you know, cancer formation, to embryo formation, long-term reproductive health effects, endocrine system functions? You would think all of that would be studied, and in particular, it wouldn't just be the stripped-out compound, but it would be the actual formulation that's used. Something that you point out very well in this report, which is that glyphosate is the specific molecule that is called the active ingredient in something like Roundup, but Roundup consists of both that glyphosate plus what they call inert, air quotes here, inert ingredients, which are other things that have their own effects that, in fact, we should probably study the thing that's being applied as the entire compound rather than just the sole part. How much of those studies have actually been done that I just described? Acute, chronic, long-term, multiple species, and also the environmental studies?
Well, you know, listen, you obviously have a full scope of understanding of the type of what we would think would be rigorous type of studies that are conducted or reviewed by the FDA and the EPA and the U.S. regulatory agencies. The interesting thing is none of these agencies conduct their own studies to show if this is safe. They rely on the industry to provide them with studies. And
the industry, you know, like so Monsanto conducts a study. So who specifically in the industry has conducted any glyphosate studies that have been reviewed by the USDA and the FDA?
Every chemical that is being sought for approval, the only science that the agencies will review is corporate-sponsored science supplied by that corporation. So in the case of glyphosate, it was that research, independent research, was I shouldn't say it's independent because it's not. It's corporate-sponsored research. That is supplied by Monsanto in the biotech industry. And the other thing is, you mentioned, here's the thing. Glyphosate is the main chemical ingredient, but it only makes up 41% of the formula of the weed killer Roundup. And glyphosate by itself does not kill weeds or does not kill plants. It actually needs that 59% of the other formulation, which is not tested. So that you're right, they never test the complete formulation for safety. They only test the single active ingredient. And you know, the interesting thing is other scientists have, you know, around the world and even in the US have done independent studies, and they always show glyphosate is more harmful than Monsanto admits. But even more importantly, Roundup, the entire Roundup formula, is basically 125 times more toxic than glyphosate alone. So the U.S. government has kind of rigged the rules against us. The chemical industry helped lobby for that by only requiring the main chemical ingredient to be tested. So basically, and the interesting thing is, like, yeah, trade secrets. Monsanto submits research and the EPA reviews it. And the fascinating thing is, I've read all these old historical documents with the EPA and Monsanto going back and forth. And they did studies on rats. They did study on mice, with dogs, all various animals to get this approved. But the interesting thing was the EPA's own scientists, when they reviewed some of these studies, were alarmed. And in fact, in the 1980s, there was a time for several years where glyphosate was considered a probable carcinogen. But Monsanto kept submitting additional studies and additional what they call historical data. And it kind of, so eventually the study that showed that it was probably carcinogenic just became noise. They were successfully in submitting an avalanche of data and new research from third-party labs that they claimed showed that safety in there. There's no reason for concern.
Now, this is, so as a toxicologist, if I wanted to go and read these studies that were submitted to a public agency so that a compound could be regulated for the public good, where would I go to read these studies?
Well, these studies are not publicly available.
What?
Yep. You would have to do a Freedom of Information Act request to get all the original submissions from the EPA. The EPA is the agency that governs approval for a new chemical, new weed killer, and they would submit this research. The interesting thing is, it's not publicly available. It's not listed on the EPA's website. There's no, you can't find it on any federal government website. And even worse is when you FOIA it. I've talked to other people that have tried to FOIA some of this. They send you back a lot of blacked out documents, meaning that they send you some information, but then they black out all this background data, which you can't, you know, in the real scientific community, how can a chemical claim that it's perfectly safe when they only did safety assessments for 41% of that product's formula? Even worse is when the scientific community can't review that data independently of the federal government or independently of this company, the scientific community really has no idea if this product is safe. We just have to take the word of Monsanto scientists, again, which from my review of their history, they are most like, I mean, they're probably one of the biggest corporate criminals on the planet. Just when you review all the chemicals that they've released into the public domain, and knowing, and even after years of, you know, using them, they find out they're harmful, they don't try to get that product off the market. They use tobacco tactics to delay any concern, and ultimately they're usually defeated in a court situation. So the good news is there's about 10 lawsuits right now linking Monsanto's Roundup to cancer. So there's basically 10, you know, civil suits out there. And you know, I think really fundamentally all the data needs to be released by the EPA. It's basically criminal malfeasance on the part of our government and these corporations to continue this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to get into some of the data here, and for anybody listening, trust me, we're going to get to very actionable things. There is a way for you personally to carve your own way through this, and keep yourself safe and protect that. We'll get to that in just a minute. But let's just talk very quickly. I got a little confused, and I am a toxicologist, so I got a little confused going through the data. I was unfamiliar with it, where you talked about what the acceptable limits, daily limits have been. And so there's a term here, which is when we set a dose of something, we set it in terms of how much you weigh and how much of this thing you're allowed to have over some period of time. So we might express it in milligrams, that's the amount, per kilogram per day. So reading through this, I found that in the U.S., the daily acceptable limit is 1.75 milligrams of glyphosate per kilogram per day. Did I get that right?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's an interesting number, 1.75 milligrams per kilogram per day. That means if you're an 80-kilogram person, they're basically saying, hey, 140 milligrams of glyphosate ending up in you, incidentally, as you wander about eating things or being rained upon, I've just learned, is fine. We're cool with that. Let's start with that number first. First off, 1.75 milligrams per kilogram per day, that's a pretty high amount to me based on we're saying that's a fairly safe compound. First, how does that compare to what the original number was that was set in the United States that the EPA assumes set based on the original data that they had gotten? Let's start there. What was the original amount?
Well, actually, you nailed that perfectly. It is, you mentioned it, the current acceptable daily intake level from the US EPA of glyphosate is 1.75 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day. Originally, this was set by the EPA, again, based on the research that Monsanto had submitted to them. It was at 0.1 parts per billion. So they increased it quite a bit originally. And the reason they applied for 1.75 milligrams per kilogram is because they knew that they were already doing research on genetically engineered crops, Roundup Ready crops. And so they raised the level as soon as they created a viable plant. The interesting thing is Europe's assessment of glyphosate's toxicity or safety, they came in, they reviewed the same data, and it was the German Consumer Safety Agency, or BVL. They set the European Union limit at almost six times lower. So it's 0.3 milligrams per kilogram. And that's basically after reviewing all the same data. And, in the process of this this investigation, I'll just say I had to go through a lot of historical documents that were neither interesting, but they did provide a lot of fascinating information. And so I looked at the German government, this agency's original review of glyphosate. It was done in I think 1998 is when they reviewed this. And they looked at the same data, and they actually, in their report, I think it was a couple hundred page report, they had a fascinating chart. And it was this chart, it's on page 16 if you want to take a quick look at it.
All right.
It says multi-generational rat studies on glyphosate with recommended ADI levels. So this is a chart, and it lists eight different companies applying for the allowable daily intake or the ADI level. They want to set a level, and that way that becomes the industry standard. And so all these other chemical companies are asking for ADI levels at, 0.1 milligrams per kilogram, 0.06 milligrams per kilogram, 0.3 milligrams per kilogram, 0.05 milligrams per kilogram. And the U.S., basically the chemical company in the United States responsible for this chemical, Monsanto, they asked for one that was at 1.75 milligrams per kilogram. And this was so unique that the reviewers actually put this chart in there to show you the differences. But more importantly, they said this. This is what they said in their food safety report. They said a very high ADI of 1.75 milligrams per kilogram of body weight was proposed in the joint dossier of Monsanto and Cheminova. That's a Dutch chemical company. Based on the NOEL, or no observable effect level, for maternal toxicity in a teratogenicity study in rabbits. Basically, there's this famous study, Tasker, in 1980. And basically, the European reviewer said, it is discussed here since it is far outside the range of all the other suggested values. So they were shocked. You know, they looked at the level request by Monsanto, and they just said, this doesn't make any sense, especially based on all the studies that you've submitted. And they so rather than expose their citizens to a level of what may be considered harmful, they chose to pick a level that was, you know, 5.5 times lower, which, you know, again, this is all in retrospect, looking back at this, seeing how the American public has kind of had been exposed to very high levels. And so the interesting thing is, as we were trying to get this report covered in the media and the press, I had a reporter ask me, well, is this an illegal level? And I said, no, it's not illegal. I said, but more importantly, you should be concerned at how high it actually is set. You know what I mean? I tried to tell them about the history and the background of it. And it's like today's reporters don't even have time to do a deep, even a surface dive into the facts. And if they know if it's going to conflict with the chemical company like Monsanto, they're just going to be attacked for days, if not weeks and months. You know, so journalists are many times hesitant to cover this topic because it's so controversial.
Well, controversial, let's be clear about that. Something we cover at Peak Prosperity a lot is that there's astroturfing and other tools that corporations bring to bear. Information's important. They don't fight clean. They don't just like put out an ad that refutes what you're saying. They'll bring in people leaving nasty comments on your site, and there'll be calls to your advertisers, and they understand what they're doing. They understand how to play this game. But anybody who studied, I love how you said this, the tobacco industry, this is how the corporate game is played. You do what you can. But let me get back to this. When was it bumped from 0.1 parts per billion all the way on up to this 1.75 milligrams per kilogram? When did that happen in the US?
That would have happened in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. So the original 0.1 parts per billion, that was set in the early 80s, and it was very evident. You know, I think Monsanto probably got panicked when there was a 2 or 3 year period, or at least a year period, year or two period, where glyphosate was considered probably carcinogenic, because, you know, that's probably not going to be allowed to be sprayed on your food at that, you know, if it had that classification. And so I'll just say they obviously they applied for and they received approval in the late 1980s, which is within full knowledge of the fact that Roundup Ready crops would be coming online in the next decade for this high acceptable daily intake. And the interesting thing is, you know, the federal government, it's almost like every single time Monsanto has applied for increased glyphosate residues on food, they've been awarded that, you know, the government has complied with them. And so in 2013, even the Obama administration approved an increase in glyphosate residues on certain crops. And it's not really based on safety assessments. It's based on the fact that more and more of this chemical is being used in our environment, and especially in farming.
And this is critical, because we didn't talk about one of the key uses, which is just shocking when it's revealed, which is that glyphosate is used as a desiccant, a drying agent on certain grains, simply to help them dry a little faster at the end of the harvest cycle. I'm sure you know much more about that than I do. Did I say that roughly right? It just sort of sprayed on?
No, it's absolutely right. Yes, a desiccant, which, you know, no one knows what a desiccant is unless maybe you're in a science, you've taken science courses. The thing is, yeah, it's used as a pre-harvest drying agent. So, you know, Monsanto is always trying to figure out more uses for the product, just like the corn and, you know, the corn industry is always trying to figure out more uses for the corn. And so they figured out you could spray this chemical Roundup on crops, and it would dry them out faster. And so they do it on wheat, oats, barley, and they do it on kind of dry edible beans. And I think in 2012, there was a case in Michigan where some of their dry edible beans tested higher than the current allowed level. And rather than, you know, change their their spraying practices, they just went to the federal government and said, can you increase this? And they did. And so this is where we found that, you know, you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned this pre-harvest spraying, because I'll just say we had an idea of where we would find it, but we were shocked when we found the three highest levels are all as a result of pre-harvest spraying. Cheerios, 2014, General Mills took Cheerios out. Took GMOs out of Cheerios based on pressure from groups like Food Democracy Now and GMO Inside and Friends of the Earth. They removed them, and so you really shouldn't be seeing any glyphosate residue in there, but their main ingredient in Cheerios is oats, which is one of the biggest crops that uses Roundup as a drying agent. The second highest was Stacy's pita chips. And fascinatingly enough, Stacy's pita chips is actually non-GMO certified. So meaning it's certified, it's tested, it doesn't contain GMOs. But that doesn't mean it's chemical free in any way. And I think that's always been one of the criticisms of the non-GMO project. It does a great service in educating people about GMOs in the food supply or where they're not, but it doesn't really take up that second area of concern. What kind of pesticides and chemicals are you being exposed to in your food? So, and then the third highest was Honey Nut Cheerios, which was almost half of what the regular Cheerios was. That level.
Yeah. Now this is, of course, I can hear people, practically through my headphones listening to this going, oh my God, does food have to be this complex? Listen, do I have to track the GMOs and I have to track all this? It's just crazy what we're doing in our food system. That's what I want to put forward here. And again, people, there are things that you can do about this, and we'll get to that in a minute. I just need to complete this exposure level, because here's the nutty part. The government has also set a 700 parts per billion limit in water for exposure to glyphosate. So if you're over that, they consider the water unsafe. So 700 parts per billion, upper limit. If I've done my math right, and there's a chance I've messed this up, but if I've done the math right, 700 parts per billion in water implies that to get to that 140 milligrams for an 80 kilogram human being, 140 milligrams of glyphosate exposure, you would basically have to drink 200,000 liters of water per day at the upper limit to get that exposure. So for some reason, exposure in water has been set wildly lower than the exposure levels in foods. Is there an explanation for that?
I think it would be considered lower because they would probably not expect, in an average area, they would not expect glyphosate to be in the water supply. You know, I'm just saying when they set it, they would have, and they may have figured some agricultural runoff. But the problem is basically Montana lied about every property that this chemical has. And we know that they lied. And I mean, I'm not using that word lightly. So they said that it was perfectly safe. It was harmless to animals. It was harmless. It was biodegradable. They actually did advertisements in France where they claimed that glyphosate cleaned the soil, that it would leave your soil. I mean, that takes some chutzpah. For a chemical company to put a chemical out there that says for their marketing material that this actually is cleaning the soil. Well, the fact is there's two court cases, one in the state of New York. The attorney general in the state of New York took Monsanto to court and said these are false claims. They're fraudulent. It's fraudulent advertising. You're going to have to stop making these claims that it's biodegradable. It does not wash away. You know, it doesn't just evaporate. They've claimed multiple things in their submittal process that it binds tightly in the soil and that it doesn't stay in the soil. I mean, it's kind of a straight. I mean, they get away with so much regulatory malfeasance in the way I look at it. And so two court cases proved that they made fraudulent safety claims. One is in New York State and one is in France. Interestingly enough, the U.S. government always repeats the same talking points that Monsanto does. Glyphosate is perfectly safe. It's the most studied chemical in the history, you know, of chemicals. I mean, they just keep making these claims. And nothing could be further from the truth. You know, one of the other tobacco tactics that the biotech industry in Monsanto has perfected is that any scientist that does a study that shows harm or even potential harm from Roundup or glyphosate, there are their products. They are basically crucified and they try to run them out of their jobs. If they're at a public university, a lot of these scientists will be fired ultimately. You know, they tried to do that to a guy named Ignacio Chiappella. He is a scientist that he's at Berkeley, University of Berkeley. In the early 2000s, he showed that there was contamination from transgenics or GMO pollen in Mexico from the corn, which is the birthplace of corn. Now, he believed this was spreading because on the migratory process, geese and ducks were picking up GMO corn that was left over in fields and then flying down to Mexico to hybrid over winter. I shouldn't say hibernate, but to winter over winter in the South. And they would deposit this GMO corn that they picked up and ate in the Midwest in Mexico, and that's how it grew. So Monsanto basically launched a smear campaign against him. He was denied tenure at University of Berkeley, and incredibly enough, he fought it. And he still is at Berkeley today. But I mean, this is like trial by fire. You're a scientist, and you're doing your duty and obligation to science, and as a citizen of your country, and you're showing that there may be harm from this product. And rather than take that consideration, you know, Monsanto just shoots the messenger. And they've been pretty effective at it up until recently. I think with the GMO labeling movement, you know, more and more people are starting to stand up. More evidence is coming forward to shows how corrupt they are.
Now, while we're on this topic, tell us briefly about some of the pushback that you've received to this report coming out.
Well, just, you know, my computer was hacked the night before it went out. We got the report out. And it's been nonstop online. And this is a pretty common thing. Within 24 hours of the report being published, Monsanto had made a statement on their Facebook page famously claiming that Monsanto's, you know, Roundup is perfectly safe. It's been approved by the EPA. And so they said that within 24 hours. Then the other thing is they have this kind of army of attack trolls. So they have a lot of biotech scientists that are on Twitter, on social media, in what they say, engaging in a public conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, these are scientists that act like angry little trolls. I mean, they act like teenage adolescents when they talk about science. So we put this out. One of the guys' name is Kevin Volta. He's a professor at the University of Florida. Ironically, he's also the department chair. And within minutes of our report being public, he starts attacking us on Twitter. And another one is this scientist in Wyoming Weeds. I can't remember his name right now. But they basically jump over this report. And they say, oh, you used the wrong method. You absolutely didn't use the right – you used ELISA. This is a testing method. ELISA is a testing method. And basically, ELISA is one of the methods. It can show that glyphosate is there, but it sometimes gives false positives. So it's really not the best way to do this type of study, this type of research. So we used an FDA registered lab in San Francisco and Resco Laboratories. They've been doing this since 1943. They're actually the FDA. They're used as a spot and hold laboratory for imports from Asia. They do testing for the federal government and pesticide residues. So we did the gold standard mass spectrometry, and I'll just say instantly the biotech industry was attacking us on claiming we used the wrong method. Once they found out that we used this kind of gold standard, which is the one, it's a testing method that regulatory agencies accept as the gold standard, then they switched to saying, oh, there's no way you could have done this. They could have done this properly. You didn't detail how they broke down the compounds. You didn't, in your report, you didn't list how they did this. And so they're trying to debunk it based on the laboratory testing things. And the fascinating thing is this went on for over a week. And eventually, and you know, this is a lot of back and forth on Twitter, social media, in chat rooms. And this guy, Kevin Volta, the New York Times did a major piece on him last year showing that despite dozens of claims that he had nothing to do with Monsanto, he was basically working behind the scenes communicating with their lobbying department almost nonstop for 2 or 3 years. And just, he always said, I'm not paid by Monsanto. Monsanto doesn't pay for me. They wrote him a $25,000 check for travel funds. So he got $25,000, you know, slush fund from Monsanto, so he could go around propagandizing about how good GMOs and how safe they are. The fascinating thing is he doesn't even do GMO research. He does research on fruits and vegetables. So why would a scientist that doesn't even have, you know, a background in doing research on GMOs be so angry and so attacking of this new report? I find it pretty shocking. And the interesting thing was, ultimately, he contacted our lab. He asked for the methods that we used. The lab explained to him how it was done. And on Thanksgiving Day, I woke up probably the best tweet of my life. Basically, this guy admitting that the lab did the right safety tests, did the right residue tests.
This was the first part that I turned to, was your method for food testing and seeing that, sorry for the geek fest here, people, but it's liquid chromatography, tandem mass spectrometry. It's really the gold standard. They actually put the test methods in here. So what the extraction process was, I read through it. I'm used to science papers like, oh yeah, this is a reasonable test. The limit of sensitivity is well below the limits that were being recorded. So, you know, it's not like you were dancing around the limit of detection. You were finding things that were vastly in excess of the limits of detection. So I'm intrigued, you know, was it hard to even find a lab that would be willing to come up with results that they knew might be published in this way?
It was. I understand there were over 300 labs that were contacted in this process. So it was a very detailed process. But it's an interesting journey to kind of go through this. Where do you test this method? Yes, we do. Could we test this process or this product? Well, yes, we could test for it. It would take some time. And glyphosate's a unique molecule. It's pretty small. It's hard to test. I'm just saying, you know, there's always these excuses for why the FDA and the USDA hasn't done residue testing. It does take a little bit longer for some labs to calibrate and determine the right testing methods. So, but they can all do it. I'm just saying in 2016, maybe in 1992 and 2000, it was difficult. Today, science has progressed and detection levels and methods have progressed rapidly. It was difficult to find a lab, and several of them, at least a dozen, said, well, we will test for you, but we do not want this information to be made public. So, you know, we obviously want to honor that lab's, you know, standards or what they're comfortable with. So we couldn't use certain labs that we knew could test. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We did get very lucky in finding Enresco Laboratories because they did the right test methods. They have a absolutely spotless reputation in terms of testing, and they did it right. I mean, it took them months to get these testing methods and protocols down. So we feel absolutely, you know, comfortable with this report.
So that's fantastic. And that was essential for me. And I think it's it was good on you to go forward and make sure that you had the science right, because now you can build off of that. And you list a bunch of peer-reviewed science on glyphosate, and it's not like you found one study that says, oh, maybe there's a few things here. This is an extensive list of things. I'm going to read through a couple of them because this is linking glyphosate potentially to everything from cancer. There's epidemiological studies supporting that, direct in vivo studies. There's endocrine disruption, maybe liver and kidney damage at doses that are fairly low compared to the limits, antibiotic resistance. The list goes on and on. So here's a one peer-reviewed study, 2014, from the Journal of Environmental and Analytical Toxicology, said that glyphosate was significantly higher in humans fed conventional food compared with predominantly organic fed humans. They remember, people, I was telling you we're going to get to the solution. The word just popped up, organic. Also, the glyphosate residues in urine were grouped according to the human health status. Here's the gold sentence in this for people interested. Chronically ill humans had significantly higher glyphosate residues in urine than healthy humans. Chronically ill. So this is a fairly large epidemiological study. It's looking at, when you look across broad groups of people, you can make a linkage there. Now, cause and effect, we don't know, but really, if you know the summary here is that glyphosate is now being linked to disturbance of normal gut bacteria, as we talked about, autoimmune diseases, birth defects, reproductive problems, infertility, antibiotic resistance, you name it. There's just so much data here. I hardly know what to, you know, my mouth is moving, but words are not really forming. Because to me as a scientist, once you have this body of data in here, there would be some way that this would be feeding back into our regulatory process, but it seems not to be at this point yet. Is that fair?
That is a very fair statement. And I'll just say that, you covered that very imperfectly well. Listen, you're a scientist. You understand exactly what this means. And the thing is, Monsanto knows what this report means, but a lot of people will read it and kind of get confused. There's a lot of science in there. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, listen, last year, the World Health Organization, their international agency for research on cancer, declared glyphosate a probable carcinogen. So 2015, a group of 17 international scientists got together, reviewed all the latest research, and said that it's probably a carcinogen. So this absolutely agrees with the same assessment from the 1980s. The interesting thing is, listen, I've done a review of this chemical. I've studied it for a decade, but I did a deep dive investigation for a year and a half. And I'll just say, after this investigation, my bigger concerns are, yes, I do think it probably causes cancer, but it does in terms of what are your exposure levels and how is a person exposed to glyphosate so that they would get cancer? But I'm glad that you brought up this 2014 study in Europe, and it was done by Monica Kruger in Europe. What they did is they analyzed dairy cows in Germany and in Denmark. In Germany, they didn't have GMO feed, a Roundup Ready feed. In Denmark, they did. So the levels of glyphosate residue were very high in these animals and in humans that had high levels of glyphosate in them. And even worse is they showed that the animals that were the sickest and the humans that were the sickest had the highest levels of glyphosate. So the real thing is, my bigger concern when I look at this, systematically, I try to take a systems approach to looking at something, looking at a problem, analyzing it, figuring out a solution. The autoimmune impacts from the antimicrobial, antibacteria aspect of glyphosate are much wider because of the food level residues that we've discovered are more likely to cause significant harm to a wider population base. The same is true with endocrine disrupting. This is chronic low dose exposure to a chemical. And so when this scientist in Europe said that the animals and humans that had the highest glyphosate levels were the sickest, it makes a lot of sense when you understand the mode of action that plant of Roundup in a farmer's field. Plants do not die outright. It's not caustic. It doesn't automatically kill them. It kills the way that they create photosynthesis. It shuts down their immune system. So plants die by eventually being exposed to pathogens in the soil. That's how Roundup works. So if it works like that in the soil in a farmer's field, how does that impact human health? And I think it's pretty concerning. And the interesting thing is, Monsanto, this is another claim that Monsanto has always made about glyphosate and Roundup, that it's rapidly excreted in urine and feces. So, I always, it's like Ronald Reagan says, trust but verify. I have a very skeptical radar when it comes to claims made by this chemical company. Mm-hmm. And while I was doing some of this research, I came across two different places where they said 99% of glyphosate is excreted. And I'm like, well, okay, that's 99%. That's not 100%. I said, where is that extra 1% going? And then I saw these, one is from an EPA document and one is from that German review. And it says that glyphosate, 1% of glyphosate is absorbed into bones, in bone tissue. Mm-hmm. And that's frightening, because if you understand that it's a chelating chemical, that means it could bind with your bone and stay in there. So one of the cancers linked to glyphosate that the World Health Organization came out with last year is non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's basically, a blood cancer. It starts in bone and bone tissue. I'm just saying having a chelating chemical absorb into bone and bone tissue, that is a real area for exposure and significant health risks that really hasn't been considered by the U.S. regulatory agencies or even the scientific community, because many people for years have believed Monsanto's talking points. And we put it in there because we think it's a new avenue by which significant harm to human health could be happening.
Well, now here's my standard as a toxicologist. When we study this, you know, you're always looking for a dose response curve, and there is a level beneath which usually, you know, something you say that's safe, right? So in mm-hmm. that dose response curve, if you're trying to set a daily acceptable limit on something or an exposure that you're going to call non-harmful, you wouldn't want any of your you wouldn't want to find anything harmful in your animal studies. Now, listen, animal studies aren't perfect. Rats metabolize things differently from humans. You know, we have to allow a little for that. But I'm here is, again, from your report, talking about an in vivo study. That means in a living rat, in a living animal, but in this case, a rat. An in vivo study of Roundup, not glyphosate, but Roundup, which has that other 59% of who knows what in there. Mm-hmm. In vivo study of Roundup administered to rats in drinking water diluted to 50 nanograms per liter glyphosate equivalents. Now, that's half the level permitted in drinking water in the EU, but 14,000 times lower than that permitted currently in drinking water in the USA, resulted in severe organ damage and a trend of increased incidence of mammary tumors in female animals over a two-year period of exposure. So that to me is the sort of finding that if I was trying to put something forward, say in a drug study or in a modern toxicological study, that would be a pretty difficult thing to get around, that finding right there. That's 50 nanograms per liter, 14,000 times lower than currently permitted. You find a finding like that, well, we'd want to follow that up. We'd want to do additional studies. We'd want to do multi-species studies. We'd want to follow that. That's pretty shocking to me.
Well, listen, I think the more that I studied this, kind of the more concerned I became. I was shocked that they kind of had gotten away with kind of rigging the rules against the American public. I was pretty stunned that, and I really think that the scientific community has to stand up to chemical companies. They have to stand up to corporate America, where they produce flawed studies that expose humans to excessive risks. And I would just say, it wouldn't be an excessive risk if glyphosate was only used on 1-5% of our food products. But it's everywhere. 75-80% of the processed foods in the U.S. contain GMO ingredients. And more importantly, Roundup is even being sprayed on crops that aren't Roundup ready as a drying agent. So the level of exposures to the human population in the United States alone is massive. And what these glyphosate residue testing shows is that the U.S. federal government is out to lunch, and they're taking the word of one of the most corrupt chemical companies on the planet, and they're exposing all of us and our children's health. Basically, we're playing Russian roulette with our food here. And I say that because American mothers go to a grocery store and they buy Cheerios because they trust that that company has made it and has made it within the rules and regulatory safety levels set by the U.S. government. The problem is now we're finding that glyphosate is, I mean, independent peer-reviewed studies showing harm from glyphosate the last 8 years alone has exploded. It used to be just a few of them. Now it's dozens of them. And I know from my work with scientists in the United States and internationally, there are at least 3 to 6 more studies coming out in the very near future that will show harm from glyphosate at these low, ultra low levels that we are all chronically exposed to in our food supply. And the good news is, though, you can avoid glyphosate. And the way to do that is to eat organic food, you know. And I think it looks like we may have to create a glyphosate-free label for the American population, just for them, if you know, as new evidence becomes, you know, apparent. I think it's going to be the American public is really kind of recoil against what they're doing to our food system.
Oh, absolutely. So that's the key thing that anybody can do. And we've discussed this for other reasons in the context of neonicotinoid pesticides. We said, hey, what's the solution? Well, organic. Eat organic. Now, I know that eating organic is more expensive, but this just shows again that whether your concern is for the environment and not, you know, wholesale slaughtering of the biocide of neonics that are just taking out everything in the insect food chain, not just the things we're calling pests, but as well for your own personal health, because you know you don't want an obviously suspect toxin being used as a drying agent on your grains. Organic is the answer to that. Now, and that's the simplest answer people can do. But beyond that, so let's say somebody says, okay, let me just for my own sake go organic here. I think it'd be a great decision. What I love is that you have a call to action. This isn't just like an oh my god. Look at this crazy, stupid stuff happening. But you had 4 points in here in your call to action. The first being a federal investigation into the likely harmful effects of glyphosate on human health. So on that first step, how would we go about getting that federal investigation? Is the EPA, what's the process? Do they ever reopen lines of inquiry into chemicals or what actually is being asked for there?
Yeah, well, they do actually. The interesting thing is right now, the FDA and the EPA, there's a renewal process for glyphosate. When I say that, the chemical comes up for review every 15 years. This is the same as true in the US as also in Europe. So the interesting thing is glyphosate was supposed to be reauthorized in 2015. The fascinating thing is, it wasn't. The Obama administration kind of kicked the can down the road. And so, you know, obviously, they probably didn't want to release this, you know, their approval of it or the reapproval of it during the election. And in fact, there was supposed to be a hearing on, with the EPA scientists, basically a review of its carcinogenicity. And crazy enough, 5 days before this is supposed to take place, a week before the election, the Obama administration canceled it. You know, they said, no, we're not going to do this. We released the report. 2 days after the report, they came back out and they said, oh, no, we're going to do this. We're going to do this on December 14th. So basically, they have a panel of experts that they have reviewing this process. And, for carcinogenicity. And the interesting thing is the World Health Organization last year declares it a probable carcinogen. This year, the EPA accidentally leaked their final review of it, and they said absolutely zero connection to cancer. So this is why this is a pretty controversial topic right now. And the EPA is currently reviewing the safety assessments for it. We're calling basically on the Inspector General to look at this whole, you know, this whole process, and we're asking them basically to do a thorough review. And considering here's the thing: the EPA scientists, they reviewed some of the latest studies, but they didn't include the findings in their consideration. So yes, they looked at the study, they marked it in the docket, but they never considered that data, this new scientific data that shows harm. They refuse to use that new data in their review, which is kind of a bit of a crazy thing for a regulatory agency to do, to have scientific studies that have been independent and peer-reviewed showing harm. You're going to note that yes, that study's out there. We're just not going to use any of that study's data in our final review. You know,
I don't even understand. You're using words and theoretically, that sentence should make sense to me, but I don't get it. It's like we're doing a study of the data, and the only thing we're not including in that is the data.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, how would a person weigh in on that process? What is this process?
Well, at Food and Racking Now, listen, we have a petition. We're calling on the EPA Inspector General to ask for a review of all the latest science. And we're doing it, the Inspector General's office and every agency is kind of like the military police. They police the agency. So they're independent. They can't be corrupted. Well, like, I mean, I'm just, you know, theoretically, they're independent. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, they're independent. And so they would do a review, and they would hopefully do a balanced review of all the latest data and, you know, figure out how, if there is real reasons for concern. And listen, we've done, this is one of three reports. There's two more coming. So just, this is just the beginning of this process. And I think when we're done, I don't think Bayer will be wanting to buy Monsanto. I think that there'll be, I think there's new evidence coming up showing likely harm from glyphosate. You know, that'll probably bog them down in court for a decade in reality. I think Bayer should call off the merger and then buy them off at component parts at a later date. I think that's very likely to happen if the U.S. government will actually do its job and stand up for the health and well-being of the American public. I'm holding my breath because I've only spent the last 10 years of my life trying to get this stuff, you know, these kind of changes at regulatory agencies and public policy and legislation. I know how difficult it is, but I do think that this is a reasonable request, is to ask for a federal investigation by the EPA Inspector General, analyze all the data, and more importantly, it's not just that. We want all the data that Monsanto submitted. We want it publicly. Do you know what I mean? We want to see it publicly.
So, and you've mentioned two of the calls to action. The third then would be a permanent ban on the use of glyphosate as a pre-harvest drying agent for crops such as dry beans, sunflowers, wheat, oats, and barley. That seems perfectly reasonable. Hey, how about we don't spray this stuff directly on the stuff right before you eat it? That doesn't seem like too... what kind of economic harm would that cause to farmers if they didn't have access to that?
Well, it's a new method. You know, they use it to dry out the crops. It dries out the crops immediately. So they wouldn't have to go into storage. They need to have the moisture content down to a certain level to make sure there's no, you know, diseases that, you know, fungus or crop diseases that show up in the drying process. And you have storage bins, and then you have the drying time that it would cost them. But all these farmers have bins anyway. They probably haven't been using them because they have been spraying Roundup. It's a shortcut, but it's a shortcut that puts all our health at risk. So there's no reason to do it. And so the question really is, the United States is in a system of push and shove. Regulation, we need regulations. Regulations are terrible. Regulations cost businesses so much money. The question is, listen, a regulation is like the rules of the road for that industry. And I would just say, if you want, regulations can be burdensome, but most times they're not. You have to understand, regulations are the thing that keep your tires on your car not falling off while you're driving down the road. We have a very clear situation here where the regulations have been written to benefit the chemical industry, and that puts us at risk, and that puts our health at risk. And so here's the thing, talking about the cost, I think the cost to the farmer in the industry is minimal, especially when you consider it on a scale of justice, the harm and the likely harm that is causing from massive exposure to this chemical in our environment. So, you know, I think like having them not spray glyphosate or Roundup Ready, Roundup on crops for pre-harvest, that will be a massive benefit to the American public's health. I just think we need to start looking at things differently. And I know you do this, but I'm just saying in this conversation, I think it's important to remember that the health and well-being of the citizens of America is 1,000 times more important than any potential harm economically to a chemical company.
Totally agree. And number four in your call to action is calling for the immediate release of all the restricted, allegedly trade secret data from all the previous industry studies on glyphosate. Hey, let's see the data, and then we can all decide. I totally agree. It's not a trade. Here's what, it's just like the secrecy laws in government. Often they're used because something embarrassing that you wouldn't want to see the light of day has come out, not because it's a legitimate secret that has a protected interest behind it that's legitimate in any way. So I would agree. Let's get the data out. I don't think that safety data should be held secret as a general principle. And of course, that's a much broader change than just anything around glyphosate itself. But I feel that the winds of change are here. You know, I'm watching people being legitimately shocked at where we are. And I got to tell you, ecological data is so shocking that it bounces off of most people. I mean, what do you do when you open up the newspaper and read that 40% of the birds are missing, right? Or an equivalent number of insects? Like, what does that mean when the whole bottom of the food pyramid has just seemingly been raptured and gone somewhere else? You know, and whether it's due to glyphosate or these other chemicals we're using, there's clear warning signs saying, look, let's just not dump stuff willy-nilly. But more importantly, are we going to use science to guide our decisions? If we're going to be a faith-based, technologically-based, science-driven culture, then let's do that or not. And here's the thing. This is not, I'm sure, you know, some people are going to start putting a partisan lens on this. I'm not, because whether this was under Obama or Bush prior or Trump now, I'm going to guarantee you that this transcends left-right. This is about dollars versus people. This is about corporations and profit motives versus our right to live in an open, transparent, and relatively safe environment to the best of our ability. And so that's why I like this report. I'm glad to hear there's more coming. This is an extraordinary effort here. Very well researched. Lots of science, lots of data. I hope we didn't get too geeky for most people on this, but there are things that I think are actionable here. Your calls to action are great. And for anybody listening, just buy organic. Just start there. That's like, listen, I don't know what's going on in the world, so let me just buy organic. That's a great place to start. And that's a fairly easy step that anybody can take. But beyond that, Dave, tell us how people can first follow your work more closely, and also how can they get involved in this? How can somebody listening help you? Help us.
Listen, thank you, Chris. That's a great question. I appreciate it. You know, you can go to the website, fooddemocracynow.org. We have a call to action on our homepage, basically asking for this investigation at the EPA, an independent investigation, also asking for a release of this data. We're also going to be launching petitions to all of these food companies, asking them to halt the practice. Here's the thing. You know, we find this to be shocking information, and we put it together. I mean, I would just say this is probably one of the driest, most sober things that I've written in the last decade, because we did not want to start a panic. We do not want to demonize food companies like General Mills and others. We really want them to just halt the practice. And, you know, I think that the biotech industry and some of the Monsanto's trolls have accused us of fear-mongering. Listen, this is just a reasonable risk assessment of this thing. And, you know, I would just say one of the things is people, I think it's very important that people take action in their daily lives where they can. And so we send out petitions or call to actions. Make sure I sign every petition that comes in my inbox, because one, I know how much hard work it takes to create that petition. And I know how important these issues are. So, you know, if you're on a list of an environmental group, I'd love you to join fooddemocracynow.org if you're interested. But any environmental group that you get a petition asking for a change in regulations or a change in policies, please sign that, because that is the backbone of reform. Now, I like to say that's kind of drive-by activism. That's the first step. The next step, you know, get engaged, you know, on Facebook and Twitter, social media, communicate your ideas and your concerns to the regulatory agencies, to the companies involved. I mean, the thing is with social media, one person can make a difference at light speed. Companies are responsive to this kind of thing, and they do move pretty quickly with the right amount of pressure. And the other aspect is, listen, you know, we're talking about buying organic food. And, you know, I go down, I look in my fridge and I look in my pantry, and, you know, 90% of everything I have in my house is organic. And that's three reasons. One, I believe it's the best food out there. Food is not a commodity, and it's not just empty calories. Food is the basis for your health, and eating healthy food gives you a better opportunity to be healthy. And more importantly, if you think that organic food is too expensive, well, you should just look up the price, you know, tag for chemotherapy or for heart disease. I'm just saying, eating organic food is about a long-term investment in your health, the health of your family, and the health of the environment. And more importantly, I think it helps, can help buying organic food. I think we need to really rebuild a new food economy that emphasizes health and well-being of the consumer, the family farmer and the environment. And I just think we need to take back our food supply with every bite that we eat. And so for me, those are the three reasons why I buy organic food and how you can, you know, help make this change happen at warp speed.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for all your work on this, Dave. We've been talking with Dave Murphy. He's one of the authors of Glyphosate, Unsafe on Any Plate. It's a fantastic study. Well done. Again, not sensationalist, packed with science, packed with data, enough there to make it, you know, really changed my view. I knew glyphosate was sort of at the edges. I'm worried about it in terms of the impact on the gut biome. The more I learn about those trillions and trillions of cohabitants of my body and the impact on our health by having a dysregulated or unbalanced gut biome, it's just piling up. It's extraordinary. Glyphosate directly inhibits a key pathway of not all, but some of the more beneficial inhabitants of my gut and your gut. On that basis alone, caution would be warranted. Studies definitely are needed. And until we have that harder data, hey, let's avoid it. So Dave, thank you so much for all your hard work in this. I'm wishing you all the best in this. I'm preparing myself for a little troll influx. It's going to happen. That's the world we live in. But this is how we have to raise awareness and give people the context they need to make the changes that are going to help us all. So thank you so much for your time today. Thank you, everybody, for listening this far into what is very much a much longer than usual podcast, but I felt it was worth it. And please visit Dave at Food Democracy Now. Dave, thank you so much.
Listen, thank you very much, Chris. I really appreciate being on Peak Prosperity, and I'm definitely looking forward to reading your book. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.